The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, we are going to answer an email about 401k withdrawals. We're also going to go over your end-of-year financial planning checklist. And assuming we have some time left, we're also going to discuss why bond values decline when interest rates go up. So kind of a mixed bag of things this week. So welcome to the show. This is the Retirement and IRA Show. My name is Chris Stein. I'm here with Jim Saulnier. He's looking things up on his computer like normal. That's excellent.
Good morning to our listeners.
Very latest information, right? So this is this show's airing for the first time on December 3rd, 2016. We are recording this on November 29th. So this is a pre-recorded show, so no live calls today. We were live a couple weeks ago, but and we'll be live again here shortly, I believe. But this show pre-recorded, so no live calls, but we are going to answer at least one email. If you're interested in having a question answered and don't want to call in, or you don't happen to be listening during a live show, you can always email us. Quickest way to email a question in would be to jim at jimhelps.com. That's jim at jimhelps.com. And we'll be more than happy to get back to you with an answer and probably turn it into a question for the show. We'll keep your identity anonymous. But we love questions via email because it allows us to have topics of interest for our radio show.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you like to cover first here, Jim?
Well,
actually, welcome back from
Thanksgiving. I was going to say that. I was going to welcome you back. We hadn't really had a chance to chat.
My Thanksgiving was shortened due to the fact that I had to come in and record a radio show while you were on vacation.
Oh, but horror. First of all, that was on Tuesday you recorded. Thanksgiving was on Thursday.
I have the whole week off normally. At my other job. Well, we get the whole week.
This isn't no state-sponsored government entity like you work for.
True, but you know, there's certain aspects of that that I enjoy, including a full week off at Christmas, and a full week at Thanksgiving, and 5 weeks off for Christmas.
You got to do an entire show, first of all, without me, so you got to talk. In fact, I listened to the show, and you cried like a baby that your throat was sore. You needed a lozenger.
No, because I normally don't speak as much.
It's
around.
Tough, isn't it?
Well, not really. I do teach 4 or 5 hours a day often, so
you got to come up
and
with
that
things.
Involves speaking.
True. Okay. But you're speaking there to millennials. I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
True. I can just say all kinds of crazy stuff. Although I do sometimes resort to throat lozenges on particularly long days. if humidity's down, it's kind of dry.
With Colorado, yeah. We're always dry.
Right. So I do rely on an occasional Halls or Ricola to get me through the day.
Okay. So overall, though, you had a good turkey day?
Yeah, it was pretty standard Thanksgiving fare. Unlike you, we probably threw some seafood in there. We had no seafood on our table.
On Thanksgiving, there was no seafood, but the 2 days before that, the 2 days before that, yeah, I had Clams Casino both days. I had some Little Necks over linguine. I had some baked stuffed scallops.
Did you say Clams Casino?
Yeah.
Is that like?
I don't know.
You're gambling with clams.
You're gambling with your life.
Yeah, one of them in here is really old. You know, if you get that one, you're in trouble.
No, Clams Casino, a phenomenal. They are Little Necks, so there'll be a Little Necks like a small cohort.
Right.
But these are Little Necks on the half shell cooked, because I don't eat raw seafood. And it's baked and stuffed with a Ritz cracker stuffing. And I just love, and they have a strip of bacon on the top.
Oh, the bacon must be the casino part, because the breading, the stuffing piece is another clam.
Okay, well, choices. It's called Clams Casino. And I had that a couple of nights, and those are just an appetizer, so they're just kind of leading into the main. Mm-hmm.
So you don't eat oysters on the half shell?
No, I don't eat raw fish.
Really? They're not fish?
It's a shellfish. It's a fish. It's called shellfish.
Well,
may not be a scaled fish. It's a shelled mm-hmm. fish. No, I do not eat it raw.
Hmm.
God created fire for a reason. If he didn't want us to eat cooked food, he wouldn't have made fire.
Fire doesn't work underwater, though, where these things live.
Yeah, but we take them out of the water, and he gave mm-hmm. us the knowledge to
I do like,
prep
do like
them.
Oysters Rockefeller, because those are cooked.
With
the spinach and stuff on there?
Probably no. I've never had them, so I don't know.
Really?
I'm a Clams Casino eater.
Oh.
When
okay.
I go home, it's not oysters.
So
it's Little Necks.
You cover it up with breading and bacon. To get it choked down, is that what you're saying?
That, true, yes. Okay. Or when I had them over linguine, they're mm-hmm. not covered in anything. They're just cooked in a Portuguese wine sauce and then put on top of linguine.
That sounds pretty good.
I like Little Necks, cherry stones they sometimes go by, mm-hmm. better than steamers. But in the summertime, nothing beats a clam boil, New England clam boil, with the lobster, the steamers, the hot dogs, the mm-hmm. potatoes.
Did you say hot dogs?
Yeah, they'll throw a hot dog into...
In the water with the clams and stuff?
Yeah, you cook it in the clam juice.
A hot dog cooked in clam juice?
Yeah,
what?
Yes!
Do you put it on a bun or just eat it?
No, you just eat it with onions and potatoes.
Like a ballpark Frank? Just
yeah,
a plain old hot dog
there.
In there?
Yeah.
And just one? People have to fight over one hot dog in there?
No, there's multiple ones.
Oh, okay. I've not seen. I've been to a
some will use
boil
sausage.
Before.
Some will put sausage. Some put hot mm-hmm. dogs, frankfurters, whatever you want to call them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a New England clam boil. But anyways, mm-hmm. I had plenty of seafood, but mm-hmm. not on Turkey Day
what
itself.
What about clam chowder? You didn't mention clam chowder.
I had two bowls of chowder.
At home or out?
Out.
Which was your favorite?
Would have been the one at the Black Whale.
The Black Whale.
Yeah.
What made it so special?
It's just a better tasting. It's not a very thick, heavy, like wallpaper paste.
Mm-hmm. I don't like those wallpaper
yeah,
paste ones.
It's a lighter texture to it. Mm-hmm. It's just good tasting. Mm. But the other one was from LePage's. And theirs is not a bad chowder either, but I like the Black Whale's chowder
Black
better.
Black Whale.
But LePage has Clams Casino that blows away the ones at Black Whale. Black Whale calls theirs stuffies, and they make it with Portuguese sausage, and it's not as good. It's not as good.
Okay.
All right. Well, anyways, that's what
Thanks
I did.
Thanks for that.
No problem.
Thanksgiving food, seafood review.
For those who don't know, I was not here mm-hmm. last week, but I listened to you and Chris, Peter. I mean, Peter mm-hmm. and you.
I'm Chris.
You're Chris. Mm-hmm. Pete's not here. Pete will be back next week.
Really?
He's going to come
so
in.
That's so soon.
Yes. But I thought you guys did a phenomenal job. You did very good.
Oh, thanks.
I listened.
So you used up some of your Thanksgiving break listening to us?
Yeah, well, when I came home Friday, so I flew around. I flew out on Monday, flew back home Friday.
Oh.
So I didn't have
Did you avoid the rush that
Oh,
way?
Hell yeah. It was wonderful. There was
better.
Nobody there.
Nice.
So I flew home Friday. So on Saturday, I listened to you. I ended up hiking Mount Sanitas in Boulder, but on my way into Boulder, I was listening to the rest of your show.
It's touching.
Okay, so we got a lot, huh?
It's touching how you're checking up on us
yeah,
like that.
Well, I want to see if you were talking about me, and
Did you see the hear the beginning of the show?
I heard. We'll talk about that later. It'll reflect in your paycheck. Did I tell you about your pay cut?
I hadn't gotten to that part yet. What topic would you like to cover first here?
We're going to do the email first.
Okay.
Then we're going to talk about why bonds go down in price when interest rates go up. That'll be a second.
Oh, I set it out of
order.
Yeah,
you set it out of order. And then the third thing is going to be a quick year-end checklist of things that we want people to make sure they're doing, because the year is quickly coming to an end.
It is.
By time people listen to this, what is it, already December 2nd?
Third. Third or after.
So they're listening to, the third or after. And December just flies by. I don't know why, but it just goes by so incredibly fast. Mm-hmm. But I think the year will be over before we know it. But anyways, I got this email in actually November 24th. Got it in when
fresh.
I was... Yeah, it's fresh. New. And I know there is a few emails we haven't gotten to yet. There's one that's a very lengthy one from a gentleman in Texas. And I've already reached...
Are you still holding that person
yes.
off?
Yes. And it's because it's going to be a whole day-long thing, and I want Pete involved in this. So...
hopefully he's not waiting for an answer.
Well, I told him, I reached out to him separately. Mm-hmm. And I talked about it on the radio, and then he podcasts us. And he listened to that, and he wrote back, and he said he's going to look forward to it. And there's just a lot here, and I want to give that answer time. And then we got another question asking me to really explain annuities more. And that's going to take a few shows. So I want, and he had some specific questions on SPIAs and how best to structure them. So for the two annuity emailers, we will get to you. And to the gentleman in Texas with a very big question, very similar to the one you and Pete answered. That one question last week went three mm-hmm. quarters of the show. Mm-hmm. This one will as well. And I'm just trying to get everyone together on as we chat about that.
Okay.
So I haven't ignored those people, but those answers are much more in depth than, for instance, today's answer. We can have this answered. I'll answer it, so it'll be a very pithy answer, and we should be done with at least three quarters of the show.
We'll see.
You doubt I can be pithy?
I doubt it.
Okay. So the question begins, Jim, very fine beginning, I think. Mm-hmm. This is George, in parentheses, quotation marks, I guess. So everybody knows that when we get any email questions, we like to protect your privacy, and we call everyone George.
Just what I always wanted, my own little bunny rabbit. I will name him George, and I will hug him and pet him and squeeze him.
I'm not a bunny rabbit.
So this particular George began with George. He said, I am an iTunian from Connecticut. As you
already started.
Well, he knew that because then he wrote, but you can tell Chris I'm from one of those states where he needs a star. Let's say Mississippi or something. So it begins with me having to lie to
you. Is he really making? Oh, so he's not really connected to Mississippi. He just wanted you to lie to me?
Yeah. So did you need Mississippi?
No, I'm not that pathetic. I'll wait for a legitimate
Mississippian?
Contact from Mississippians.
But I will say to this particular iTunian, Chris looked when I said Connecticut. It was hilarious. He usually looks at me as I'm talking. You darted up to that map.
And, well, I couldn't remember if we had Connecticut.
And then the look of dejection on your face when you saw a star in Connecticut already.
I know. I got excited for a second.
It just is odd. You haven't gotten a star in a while. It's like everyone who emails is from these 28 states, and they're ignoring the rest.
Well, it's like when you're playing poker or something, when you got everything, or gin. You know, when you're playing gin, and you need that one last card, it just seems to take forever. It's the same kind of thing. We have so many stars on here now, the ones we need, we're just waiting and waiting and waiting for those. But I still can't. I'm still not convinced West Virginia has internet or iTunes.
If there is an iTunian listener from West Virginia, if you could email us, Chris would really
just to confirm you're out there. I don't believe there are any.
There's no internet in West Virginia.
Well, internet that connects to us.
Okay, so excuse me. We'll see. Maybe we'll get someone. So he begins, I am in my early 40s and hoping to retire from my current employer at age 55. Mm. Most of my retirement savings are in my company 401k. About half of my contributions are in a traditional 401k, and the other half are in the Roth option. I will need some of that money in my early retirement, so I expect to be taking advantage of the age 55 rule to allow for penalty-free distributions. Mm-hmm. I've been led to believe that when taking 401k distributions, you cannot be selective as to which contributions you are taking from, Roth versus traditional. Therefore, it is best to roll the 401k over to an IRA so I can control my distributions better. Is this true? If yes, that would mean that I cannot be as flexible in using the Roth distributions to optimize my tax situation, since I'll be relying on the age 55 rule and I won't be able to roll it over to an IRA until the year I turn 59 and a half.
There's a few moving parts in here.
Mm-hmm. Can you confirm or negate this idea? Do you have any suggestions for maximizing our options? Thank you for your help. I appreciate the effort you, Chris, and Peter put into the show. I find it to be entertaining and valuable. Okay, so very nice email. A lot of moving parts. Let me address a few things, and you can add as you see fit. What is this age 55 rule of which he speaks?
Well, that people probably know, having if they've listened to the show much at all or paid much attention to retirement plans, if you withdraw money from a tax-deferred retirement plan prior to age 59 and a half, you're subject to what's called the early withdrawal penalty, which in most cases is 10% of the amount you're withdrawing, in addition to the taxes you will owe, since this was a tax-deferred account. So if you retire before 59 and a half, without any special rules in place, any withdrawals you take from these retirement accounts would subject you to the early withdrawal penalty. And some people, as the writer, the author of this email indicate, have plans to retire prior to 59 and a half. So there was a rule put in place that only applies to certain accounts where you're allowed to take withdrawals and avoid the early withdrawal penalty as young as age 55. Now, the restrictions on that, you can only take withdrawals and avoid the 59 and a half rule if you're taking withdrawals from an account that was an employer-sponsored account and it was the employer at which you retired from at age 55 or later. So if he retires at 55, he can actually withdraw money from that 401k between age 55 and 59 and a half and not be subject to the 10% penalty. Now, if he had a 401k from a previous employer, he can't touch that one. It's only the account, the retirement account from the employer whom you retired from at age 55 or later. And if you retire at 54, doesn't work. It's got to be 55 or later.
Or in the year you turn 55.
Technically, if you want to talk about the exact date, yes, it's in the year. So you could technically be 54 in some months.
Absolutely. That's what I was going to point out.
So yes, it's in the year you reach 55. If you pull the trigger that year or later, you get in under this special rule, and it only applies to the account, the retirement account, from that particular employer. So if you have IRAs or you have a previous employer 401k, those accounts still are going to be subject to the 59 and a half restriction, but you get that, you know, 4.5 year grace period, if you will, on the 401k.
So what it sounds like to me, because this age 55 exemption to the 10% early withdrawal penalty is used a lot by early retirees, because it not only saves them the 10% penalty, they are also looking to do what he kind of alludes to. He wants to optimize his tax situation every year. So maybe he wants to take a little out of the traditional 401k and declare it as taxes, declare it as income rather, and pay taxes on it. Maybe to fill up the lower tax brackets, go from 0 to 10 to 15. I don't know. I'm just making this. No, the brackets are real, but I'm just reading into his email that sounds to me like he's doing. And then if he wants to max out one of those brackets, be it the 10 or the 15, then he wants to be able to switch to the Roth option for the rest of the year and take that money out, because coming from the Roth, it'll be 100% tax free. Now, he's not age 59 and a half, so he has to remember that. And he might be thinking that coming from the Roth option, he can take out his contributions first. This is where his strategy is going to run into a little bit of a problem that I want to get into. I think the issue is a little greater than what he might be writing about. What he's asking is, he was told he has to take some money from the Roth and some money from the traditional.
Right, that he can't control.
He can't control. So, for instance, let's just say he was going to take $10,000 out. He's under the impression he has to take $5,000 from the Roth, $5,000 from the traditional. And it's going to kind of blow up what he wants to do. So to get more flexibility on his distributions, he could move the traditional 401k over to a IRA. But then he'll be subject to the 10% early withdrawal penalty, because that exemption is lost if he moves the money to an IRA. He's got to keep it in the 401k. So I'm under the impression he doesn't want to do that, because now he's going to have to take money from his Roth, and he may not want to, or he's going to want to take money just from the Roth but be forced to take some out of the traditional. So he's a little concerned that some of his flexibility is going to be lost. So I thought I knew the answer. Well, I know the answer. I thought I knew what he was getting at, but I had a quick question for him. So I did email him, and he did get back to me. And I wanted to know if he got this information from the employer or 401k custodian, or did he get the information just generally speaking? So I wrote to him and asked him that. And he wrote back to me and said, "I look forward to listening to the show for my answer. I heard this outside of my custodian. I'm not sure where. And with additional searches, I could not find anything to either confirm or refute that. Search internet searches for Roth 401ks ended up with very little about how to actually take distributions, only about contributions." And it was in this answer, Chris, where he alluded to Roth 401ks. So I'm beginning to feel, and I didn't have time today, I was busy working, to get back to him. It sounds to me like he wants to be selective. Take some money from the traditional, take some money from the Roth. So,
or maybe even between 55 and 59 and a half, take only from the traditional. Because if that's his only source of income, he'll have a pretty attractive tax situation on his hands. And he may want to choose to be exposed to taxes in those early years rather than wait until later.
Right. But having to take half from the Roth and half from the traditional, he is a little concerned. I have good news for him and I have bad news for him. And we'll get to that. It's called a teaser, because we have a break coming up, right?
Well, you're not gonna leave people thinking that they have to take it proportionally like that, are you?
I'm not saying anything. How much time do we have left?
We have just over a minute.
Oh, no problem. Because I'm not getting into it. Because as soon as I do, you're gonna click that darn music.
Okay.
So
you can still talk over the
music. I have good news, and I'm gonna have bad news for him. And we'll come back with that.
So that is a teaser. So when we come back from this short break, we are going to hear a song from 1935, which was the year that Social Security started. And we talk a fair amount of Social Security info on this show, so we honor that and connecting our musical selections to key numbers or dates in the Social Security system. And this one's a big one, the year that Social Security started. And the song title for this song, this is the hint, You can see if you can get this one, Jim, because I know you were glued to the radio in 1935.
I just love 1935 music.
The song title for this song from 1935 refers to the formal wear required on a party invitation for a really swank party.
Tuxedo?
Another name for it. You can ponder that during the short break.
Zoot shoot.
No, that's much later.
Okay, I'm close.
Okay, so we'll get back. We'll get back to that after this short break here on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
I just got an invitation through the mails. Your presence requested this evening. It's formal, top hat, white tie, and tails. Nothing now could take the wind out of my sails. Because I'm invited to step out this evening with top hat, white tie, and tails.
Well, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. It's one of the top songs from 1935, the year that Social Security started.
Top hat, white hat, and tails?
White tie.
White tie and tails? And tails. Is that the name
tails.
Of it?
It's a tuxedo with the long
tails.
Yeah,
I know what it
back.
Is. Is that the name of the song?
It's top hat, white tie, and tails.
Right, see, I guessed it.
Well, he said it several times in the show, in the song, so it's fairly obvious.
And that does not sound... I mean, usually 1935 recordings are all crackly.
And that was an original recording, but remastered. They went to the original and cleaned it up and made it sound
really
pretty.
Oh, so it got rid of all that crackly stuff.
Yeah, so it's that was, in fact, Fred Astaire singing that. But it was the some of the old songs like that have been remastered and sound pretty darn good. And that's a great example.
Very good. Very nice.
So this was written by Irving Berlin and performed by Fred Astaire, like I mentioned, for the 1935 screwball comedy hit Top Hat, which is actually a great movie. Has Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, that pair that made wonderful movies actually back in the mid-30s. And I was actually on a big kick when I was a teenager and watched all those movies. I was fascinated by those movies. I'm not sure why. They're
like,
good. They're,
like
they're
dancing.
They're good, and they're very escapist. I mean, they're very, you know, the plots in those movies weren't particularly difficult to follow nor stressful in any way. So if you want to just sit down, have an enjoyable, like reading a comic book or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So anyway.
Excellent.
I like that song and that movie.
Okay. Well,
so back to our
question. We left email. Everyone hanging.
Yes.
We had a gentleman emailed us from Connecticut, wants me to tell Chris he's from Mississippi, but he's from Connecticut. And do we have
maybe it's Connecticut, Mississippi. Connecticut. Is there a Connecticut in Mississippi?
I don't know. Hmm. You could fit Connecticut in Mississippi.
That's for sure.
But anyways, so what he has, folks, is he is in his 40s. He wants to retire at 55. He wants to retire at 55 from his current employer and take advantage of what is known as the age 55 exemption. As Chris talked about in the previous segment, if you take money out of a qualified retirement account, and that would be a 401k, 403b, a IRA.
An IRA.
So I said an IRA.
Age 55 doesn't work on an IRA unless it's a simple.
What you weren't letting me get to it. If you take money out of those accounts prior to the age of 59 and a half, you will pay a 10% penalty.
Well,
that's where I was going with that.
Well, you had previously said what the exemption is about, and then you went on to say it, so it was misleading.
So there is an exemption to the age 59 and a half penalty, and it's called the age 55 exemption. Mm-hmm. And if you retire in the year you turn 55, not at 55, but in the year you turn 55.
Or later.
You will be allowed to take money out of that current employer's 401k without having to pay the 10% penalty. So that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to retire in the year he turned 55. And he admitted that between 55 and 59 and a half, when at that point the point the penalty goes away, period, so it's a moot point. He wanted to do some selective distributions.
He needed money from this account in order to live on.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to manage his tax situation. And I'm just guessing what he was looking to do is take some money from the traditional, or maybe some money from the Roth, or maybe some money for the Roth and not the traditional. He wants to be very flexible. And he was told that wouldn't happen, that any distribution he takes would be prorated and be considered taken from the Roth 401k as well as the traditional 401k. And he wanted me to either confirm or deny that and help him out here. Mm-hmm. So I thought I was pretty sure on
the... And that's the good news.
The good news is he can do it, but the bad news is he may not be able to do it. So there's good news and bad news here. What I did, first of all, is I wanted to find out if this was something the employer or the custodian told him. Because as we know, 401ks can set their own rules.
To a certain extent, there's usually some maximums or minimums that are required by the overall rules. But then the company, as long as they meet that restriction, has some leeway beyond that. They can choose to do certain things that are allowed but not required and choose not to.
For instance, some companies do not allow more than one distribution a year. Mm-hmm. They will not let you call up whenever you want and take your money out.
Right.
That's not an IRS rule. That's a company rule. Mm-hmm.
Some companies allow you to borrow money from your 401k.
Some do not.
Others do not. So that's allowed but not required. So that's what we're talking about.
Right.
There's some flexibility from the individual 401k provider as to the rules.
So I had never heard of this type of pro rata treatment between traditional 401k and Roth 401k, but there is pro rata treatment of a Roth 401k, and I'll explain what that is in a minute. But it was a pro rata treatment of contributions into the Roth 401k, not a pro rata treatment between the Roth 401k and the traditional 401k. That said, just because I never heard of it doesn't mean a company couldn't make that as part of their rule. So I had to see first, is there an IRS rule on this? And then can a company impose their own rule and say, hey, any distribution we're going to treat as 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
So
you didn't find that though, did you?
Well, not yet, no.
Yeah.
So what I did is I got a hold of the gentleman and he said, no, I never heard this from the company. Then I wanted to make sure. So I got a hold of the big guns.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a hold of the Ed Slot Group. And I generally will email them rather than call them. And emailing them is better because you get to send it to all of them. So it goes to Jeff, Bev, and Sarah. And then when they reply back to you, they reply all, so everybody can proof the answer and make sure they're all copacetic with the answer.
Nice.
And here's what they found. They wrote back and they said, Jim, we could not find anything definitive on this. You keep shaking your head, so do you know something that you want to share with us?
No.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you knew a code or anything.
A code?
A code section or something.
No.
Oh. Well, they did send the code section, mm-hmm. IRC code 1.402A-1.
That's
sure
the one,
that's
I was
the one
about.
You
yeah.
were thinking of. I thought so.
It was on the tip of my tongue.
1.402A-1. You can just tell that's a government bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure all those numbers mean something. Mm-hmm. And the letter A, I have no idea. But that's the best they could find. That deals with distributions, they said, from employer Roth accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And the code specifies that Roth accounts must be separate accounts in the employer plan. And Roth transactions are accounted for separately from other plan assets. So that's the first thing the Ed Slot Group mm-hmm. found. Then they found on Fairmark's website, and that's Fairmark, Fairmark.com. They're a tax-type software. They're a very knowledgeable website. They found, and there was a statement on their website, that a plan participant should be able to designate which account he or she wants to take a distribution from. But Fairmark specifically stated There is no code citation for this. So in other words, what Ed found and Fairmark is stating, there's no answer to this. The IRS says, hey, they must be accounted for separately.
Right, and they're two separate accounts.
And they're two separate accounts. So one would think you have the right to specify which one. But that said, Ed's group said, it doesn't necessarily mean the company
couldn't make a rule.
Couldn't make that rule.
I've never heard of a company having that rule, nor would I know their reason for doing so, because it would handcuff someone in their flexibility
from
which
what
is
he's
the
trying
concern,
to do. Right.
He wants to be able to pick from either the traditional or the Roth or some mixture between the two, but on his choice. Just like if you think about it, if he had a 401k there and a 457 or a 403b, some kind of mixture, sometimes people have multiple qualified accounts at the same employer. Just because you take money from one doesn't, they don't force you to take money from multiples. Now, I agree, because there's not a restriction stating the company can't make that rule. Legally, they probably could, but why?
And that's what Ed's group wrote.
Yeah.
So then they wrote, and I'll read from their email, I would suggest he go back to his employer. Now, Ed's group was under the assumption that the employer's said this.
Had told them, yeah.
Now, we know because the gentleman emailed me back and said, no, the employer never told me this. I heard this from somewhere. Mm-hmm. But they suggested to go to the employer and ask the question again. If you get the same answer, in other words, they're forcing you to take it pro rata, ask them for the code section of which they based that on, and ask them where in the summary plan description it's indicating he has to do that.
No, I don't think he's going to find it that
And way. I don't think he's going to find it.
I think the chances of that are slim to none.
Well, we know the answer now. The employer never told him this.
Right.
He had heard this. So the good news to this listener is there is nothing in the code that says they have to be treated pro rata. There's nothing there. The only thing in the code and that Ed found is section 1.402A-1, which specifically says they must be separate.
Which actually enhances the chances that you're not being forced to take
right.
them out pro rata.
Exactly. And then Fairmark, F-A-I-R-M-A-R-K, Fairmark.com, which is a very knowledgeable website on this, has said specifically you should, not you personally, listener, but a person should be able to designate from which account they are debiting. Mm-hmm. But Fairmark admits, quote, there is nothing in the code to cite for this statement of ours, end quote. So they're just saying, look, we think you should be able to do this, but there's nothing in the code that says.
And if a person happens to be listening that has an employer that somehow has this rule, I would, as an employee, complain about that.
Absolutely.
Because it is restricting your flexibility on distributions, and that matters because taxes count. Taxes make a difference in your retirement lifestyle.
And you need the flexibility.
You need to be able to choose to take money from an account that will be taxed in a year you may not have other taxable income, like Social Security or other taxable distributions that you might have, or maybe a part-time job that you might have later in life. It'd be nice to choose in those years to take money out of an account and be willing to pay taxes at low marginal rates, rather than being forced to take out money you'd rather reserve for another year. So if a company, and I don't think anybody's going to run into this, but I agree that the code, I've never read anything that prohibited this, but again, I don't know why a company would come up with this rule other than they might think it solves some administrative problem for them, but it creates a nightmare of restrictions for the plan participants.
Yeah.
And those plan participants should all link arms, join together, and sing, you know,
well,
songs.
Well, this particular emailer,
office.
This particular iTunian listener, he admits, you know, I didn't get this from my company. And so I get the good news is, listener, that's not the pro rata rule you have to worry about, because that pro rata rule doesn't exist. But let's get to the pro rata rule on the Roth 401k. Where you might run into some problems, listener, is you've probably heard Chris and I, as we talk repeatedly about IRAs, we often say on Roth IRAs, the money you put in can come out at any time for any reason with no taxes and no penalties. Roth IRAs have distribution ordering rules. And the rules are simple. The first dollars to come out of your Roth IRA are always, always,
always,
always. First, a return of your contributions. The money you put in is the first dollars to come out of a Roth IRA. Second will be conversions. So money that you have converted will be second, and it comes out in order of conversions. If you did a conversion in 2013, that money comes out first. Then another one in 2014, when there's no more contributions and there's no more 2013 conversions, then the 2014 conversions are coming out. And the very last element or dollar to be removed from a Roth IRA is earnings.
If there are any.
If there are any. That is not the case with a Roth 401k. Everything is mingled and prorated. So you cannot specify just your after-tax money is coming out. You cannot do that with a Roth 401k. So if you take any money from your Roth 401k during this time period, you will be taking a pro rata. So it's a calculation you're going to have to do, because I can guarantee your employer is not doing this for you. But you have to keep track of the money you put in, the earnings associated with that money, and the conversions, if any. So if you converted any of your traditional 401k to a Roth 401k, you've got to track that. And every dollar you take out when you retire, some will be a return of your money, so it will not be subject to taxes. Some of it might be conversion, which might be subject to a 10% penalty if you took it out within 5 years of converting it. And some of it will be interest or earnings, which will be subject to taxes because you are not 59 and a half. Yeah.
And this is pro rata situation is pretty much a moot point after you reach 59 and a half, other than possibly the 5-year conversion rule. But since contributions are going to come out and well, you know, most people aren't taking money out of their Roth 401k within 5 years of a conversion. And to be honest with you, most people don't have converted money in their Roth 401k. Some people do, but it's not super, super common. But the issue here for him is he's wanting to withdraw money between 55 and 59 and a half.
He's going
to
be hit with taxes.
He's going to be hit on some taxes for some of those earnings that are coming out pro rata if it's coming from the Roth 401k, which again, points to my gut instinct on this, which is you're going to want to take money out of the traditional 401k first anyway, because he's retired, not working, doesn't have Social Security started yet. He doesn't indicate any other income sources necessarily. So what better years to start taking out money and be subject them to taxes than 55 to 59 and a half? Now, I'm basing this just on the little bit of his story he's told us. There might be more details that would change my recommendation, but based on the little bit he's told us, unless there's some major complication with more of his financial situation, that's my gut reaction to this, that leave that Roth 401k for later, particularly in the years where you start Social Security.
But what I think he could run into, Chris, is I'm just guessing he's trying to fill or maybe trying to fill the lower brackets with traditional distribution. And when he hits a certain bracket, he was hoping to then take from the Roth. And it's just important for him to know it's not going to be able to happen. Now, a workaround would be, if his employer will allow, move the Roth 401k to a Roth IRA. And now the pro rata rule goes away.
Which after he retires, he's allowed to do that.
Absolutely. And what he could then do, assuming there's enough contributions in there, if he moved it to a Roth IRA, he can now specify, I'm only taking contributions.
He wouldn't have to specify. The first money to come out would be that.
His contributions.
You just need to keep track of how much it was.
To track
so he
it.
Didn't go through all of that and then start dipping into either earnings or conversions that may have happened previously. So
and he
that,
would,
that would give him more of the flexibility he'd want.
Yes.
Now, he can't usually do that while he's still working there, but the moment he separates from service is the terminology, a.k.a. retires or quits that job, he now can put that move that 401k Roth to an IRA Roth.
So I'm going to strongly recommend he keeps track of his basis in that Roth 401k. And it's very important. Either do it on a Form 8606, which is not required, but or just create an Excel spreadsheet every year where you are tracking, listener, how much money you're putting into that Roth 401k. Then when you move it to a Roth IRA, you will immediately file Form 8606 declaring what your basis is. And then you can start withdrawing just your basis between 55 and 59 and a half. At 59 and a half, the tax implications on the earnings in the Roth go away, and you're not going to have to worry about this. Yeah. So I just wanted to point out to him the pro rata rule I don't think is going to apply, where he has to take some from the traditional and some from the Roth, but there is a pro rata issue with Roth distributions. So if you did do this strategy to me, and you want to take money from the Roth 401k and you are hoping to just take out your contributions, move the Roth 401k when you retire to a Roth IRA, leave the traditional 401k at the employer for the exemption from the 10% mm-hmm. penalty.
At least the amount you think you need access to from 55 to 59 and a half. If you want the money out of the 401k off into an IRA, you can move that part of it. You don't, you're not forced to roll over the entire 401k.
You don't have to, but I would actually leave
it. Just leave it all
I'd
there.
Leave it all mm-hmm. there, because what if he guesses wrong? You can't.
True. You can't put it back.
Yeah, it's like toothpaste coming out. Yeah, right. Now, some employers will allow rollovers back in, and he could do that whole thing again, but it just.
No, it'd be a, if he's worried about that possibility,
yeah,
then
I would just leave it all there. Yeah. So anyways, you see how a simple question can turn mm-hmm. into a little
and
bit more.
Wasn't there a little secondary part to his question, or is that the whole thing? I thought there was one extra little piece, but maybe
where
not.
He said how wonderful I was?
No, that definitely was not it.
I think that was in there. Let me look.
I might be wrong. That might have been the whole thing.
Can you confirm and negate this idea? Do you have any suggestions for maximizing our options? I think we covered that.
I think so.
I appreciate you, Chris and Peter. You put in the effort in the show. I find it to be very entertaining and valuable. And you, Jim, by far, are the best radio show host and knowledgeable. It's all here.
That it seemed a little longer that time you read it.
I'm telling you, that's what it says.
It's called embellishment.
It's not embellishment. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that takes care mm-hmm. of that. Let's get into, we got 3 minutes left. Mm-hmm. What I want to get into next is a little bit of issue of what's happening right now. Right now, we're seeing
increases in interest rates.
We're seeing an increase in interest rates very mm-hmm. quickly. And people will have noticed the value of their bonds have probably dropped quite a bit. And I got this information from Morningstar. Actually, the information came to me from an insurance company, but it's based on a recent...
article.
Thank you. Not article, but data point from Morningstar. And I'm trying to... Here it is. Okay. So what they found is that between August 10th of 2016 to November 10th, 2016, 3 month period... Mm-hmm. The U.S. Treasury interest rates on the 10-year Treasury bond went up from 1.5% to 2.15%. So it went up is what mm-hmm. they were showing. But there were massive losses in some bond holdings. And according to Morningstar, their long-term bond category during this three-month period, which will... have bonds, a long-term bond is generally a bond that's going to mature in 10 years or more. And oftentimes you'll see them around 20 or 30-year maturities. So these are bonds that are designed to be held for a very long time. Their long-term bond category fell 7.25% in that three-month period. And when they removed corporate bonds and they looked at just their government bond category, it lost 9.27% in that three-month period. So when I come back, I want to explain to you why bonds go down when interest rates go up.
Excellent. So when we come back from this short break, once again, we're going to hear the number one song this week in 1976. And actually, that teaser is a little bit wrong because Rod Stewart's Tonight's the Night remains the number one spot in 1976, but it stays there for a long time. So we're not going to listen to Rod Stewart every single week.
You know, ever since you started crying about that raspy voice singer there, what did she sing?
Kim
Betty
Carnes.
Davis Eyes. Mm-hmm. Tina is afraid to play a song more than once.
Well, I like the mixture. I like the variety here. So we're going to hear the number two song from 1976, and it's a story of a famous ship.
Edmund Fitzgerald.
We'll see.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down of the big lake they call Gitche-Gumee. The lake, it is said, never gives up her dead when the skies of November turn gloomy.
Well, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. That is the number two song this week in 1976. A far finer song than the number one song that week. Rod Stewart has never sung anything as good as this song. This is one of my favorite songs.
I love this song, too.
This is an excellent song. Even Gordon Lightfoot, the singer, considers this to be his finest work. This, of course, is The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. It's an excellent song. And fairly historically accurate.
Okay.
Although in 2010, he did change some of the words a little bit to reflect new research that showed that it wasn't the crew screwing up. Apparently, there was a line in there originally about the crew made a mistake or something, and new research showed that that probably was not true.
Ah, okay.
That it was just the length of the ship and the size of the waves. It was straddling the waves, and it kind of broke in half. And
well, it was full of iron ore.
Plunged to the bottom.
Last time I checked, iron's pretty damn heavy.
It is. It is. But that was a big old ship. I don't know if you've been up to the Great Lakes and seen those ships. They're humongous.
No, I have not seen that. But I will say the old Gordon Lightfoot looks like Ryan Fitzpatrick, the Jets quarterback.
Really? Could they be one and the same?
It's just the hair and the beard.
Hmm.
So every
I
time
haven't seen the old Gordon Lightfoot. I've only seen the young, fresh.
Well, that's what I mean, the old Gordon Lightfoot.
He kind of does.
Looks like Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Maybe that's his dad.
I don't know.
I don't know.
But not so much when he's now with the long hair and the shaved face. Mm-hmm. But in the 70s, when he had that big bushy hair and the big beard, that's Ryan Fitzpatrick. Throw a Jets helmet on Gordon Lightfoot back then, he could have been Ryan Fitzpatrick. I'll put a guitar in Ryan Fitzpatrick's hand, and he could be Gordon Lightfoot. Except when one tries to throw a football and the other tries to sing. But
then
you know the difference. Not that I'm a Jets fan, but he just looks like Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Jets, speaking of the Jets.
Okay, we'll speak.
That was a little scary this weekend for you all.
Jets, Dolphins, Bills, they all play as hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Patriots are having serious troubles.
I thought this past weekend it really looked like Christmas had come early for a while, because it looked like the Raiders were going to lose, the Patriots were going to lose, and the full expectation is the Broncos would win. None of those three things happened. Christmas was ruined. Early
the
Christmas.
The Grinch stole
early Christmas.
What phenomenal games. I would have to say.
This was a good game weekend.
The Patriots were probably the most boring game. The Raiders, what a phenomenal game that was. And then the Broncos and the Chiefs, my goodness, just a great game. And ended the way I preferred.
It was an entertaining game.
It was very entertaining. But the Patriots got some serious troubles. So I'm not quite sure how far we're going to go. But
even with troubles, they find a way to do well.
We'll see. But anyways, back to... Is this the third segment or the fourth segment?
Third, number three.
Third. Mm-hmm. So when do we explain to people why we do all this music
stuff?
We'll
do that next time, maybe.
Next time.
I don't know.
Okay.
So, maybe never.
We always do.
That's why we don't have to.
Well, we could be getting a new listener who is wondering why on God's good earth are they playing Gordon Lightfoot and prior to that, Fred Astaire?
I'll tell him right now. So we like to connect all of our musical tributes to Social Security in some way. The first one, 1935, was the year Social Security started. 1976 was 40 years ago, and there's a provision in the Social Security Code that refers to 40 elapsed years in their description of how to calculate someone's retirement benefit. As part of that same description, it goes on to discuss 35 computational years, which are the 35 years of your earnings that are included in your calculation for your retirement benefit. So in the next segment, in the next break, we're going to take a listen to the number one song from 35 years ago. So we look back to 1935, we look back 40 years, and we look back 35 years, all in honor of Social Security. And in the last segment, I'll give you a little update on what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, which is our blog about Social Security.
Excellent. Very pithy. See, I can't do that.
It's true.
I'd still be saying good morning.
True.
So that's very good. I was going to ask you something. Oh, do we know for a fact we are going to cover the number one song in America from 35 years ago? Or is it the number two because number one is a repeat?
This is not the number one song.
See?
Mm-hmm.
I have to correct you.
So the number one song, I'll tell you, from 35 years ago, I wouldn't mind hearing over and over and over again, because I have a mad crush on the singer, Olivia Newton-John, singing Physical. That one's fine with me. Kim Carnes' raspy voice needs to clear her throat, needs a throat lozenge. I can't hear that over and over and over again. Olivia Newton-John, no problem.
But she,
every day.
But Tina, who produces this for us, she is not leading in with Let's Get Physical?
Negative, because we've already listened to that, and it'll play for another 10 weeks or something ridiculous like that.
Goodness.
So this next song is female-oriented, like of the Physical song. So, yeah.
Okay. Is it the number two?
It doesn't say.
Oh.
Number three. Eventually hitting number three. So I don't know if it was number three, but it was in the top 10.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that in the next segment. Mm-hmm. Let's get back to what we ended on. Mm-hmm. And I know you teach this to your students, and I'm often asked in the office by clients and prospects, what's going on and how come they keep hearing that when interest rates go up, bonds go down?
Well, before you get into that, some people may not understand just the basics of how a bond works.
All right, why don't you do that?
So let me just do a quick pithy version of how a bond works. When you buy a bond, say from a company or from the government, you're loaning them money, and you're going to pay a price. The price is the agreed amount at the beginning that you're going to pay if you buy it from either another investor or you buy it directly from the company or the government. That's the price you pay. So there's the first cash flow, if you will. You pay the price. Then over the life of a normal bond, you're going to receive interest payments. Those in bond lingo are called coupon payments. So if you ever hear about coupon payments, that's what they're talking about, the interest payments over the life of the bond. So that's your reward for loaning the money to the company. At the end, you're going to receive an amount that was fixed at the beginning of the agreement. In bond lingo, it's called the par value or the face value. But that is the big lump sum amount you're going to get back. It usually is pretty close to the price that you paid up front, but not always. But it's a large cash flow. So in addition to all the interest you receive over the life of the bond, you're going to close out this relationship by them giving you this big lump sum amount back at the very end called the par value or the face value. So there's those three things that happen. You pay the price, you then receive the interest payments over the life of the bond, and then you receive the par value at the end. That's the basic situation with a bond.
Excellent. Very pithy. To the point, and there's a lot of other moving parts here, folks, in bonds. And we're not really, maybe we'll do another show later, get into more in-depth analysis of bonds. But what I just want to prep people on is that interest rates over the past 3 months have gone up. Even though the Federal Reserve have yet to, quote-unquote, raise interest rates, the Federal Reserve only controls short-term, very short-term rates, bank rates, so to speak. And that's why you may not have noticed any increase in your bank interest rates in a savings or checking or CD account. But anybody who has investment bonds, anybody who may have short-term, intermediate, or long-term bonds, whether they own them through a diversified investment option or an individual bond themselves, you may have noticed your bond value going down, but your potential interest rate going up because it reacts very quickly to market forces. Bank rates that the Federal Reserve control are not impacted by market forces, but market-driven bonds, which is what most bonds are obviously driven by the market. And the market is a little bit nervous about after Trump got elected. They're not worried about Trump being elected. The equity markets have gone haywire after Trump got elected. But their thought is that if Trump enacts a lot of what he wants to do, the repatriation of a lot of overseas profits, a huge expansion of infrastructure spending, and a massive cutting in taxes, which would hopefully lead to a lot of new investment. If all three of those happen, Chris, the thought is that inflation is going to come back and fast, and rising inflation will cause interest rates to rise. So we're starting to see the market reacting to this by pricing in higher future inflation being reflected in investment bonds, and interest rates are being driven up. Not the interest rates the Federal Reserve controls, folks, but interest rates that the market controls. The market controls mortgage rates. Mortgage rates key off of the 10-year Treasury rate. So mortgages have gotten more expensive over the past 3 months. And it's all because of anticipation of higher interest rates. And, excuse me, higher inflation, which will lead to higher interest rates. So what I wanted to explain to people is why there seems to be this inverse relation that when interest rates go up, the value of bonds goes down. Remember, we alluded, not alluded to, I quoted from Morningstar that during the 3 month period beginning August 10th, 2016 to November 10th, 2016, the U.S. Treasury bond, a 10-year U.S. Treasury bond, the interest rates on that bond have gone up from 1.5% to 2.15%. That is a 0.65 percentage point increase in interest rates. It is an actual increase in interest rates, I believe, I figured it out, of 43%. But let's see. When you go from 1.5% to 2.15%, that is a 43% increase in interest rates. So interest rates in a three-month period went up quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone will deny that. And what Morningstar was showing is that their long-term bond category, which is generally a category that Morningstar will track of bonds that mature in 10 years or more, that particular category is down 7.25% in that three-month period. And if you strip out corporate bonds and just look at long-term government bonds, that category lost 9.27%. Now, one thing, and Chris would agree, the longer the term bond, and these are long-term bonds, the longer the bond maturity, the more volatile they are to interest rate fluctuations. If you have a money market account, which owned very, very short-term bonds, I mean, of days or months before this bond matures, very, very short-term, that may not have reacted as negatively. So the shorter the term of the bond, the less volatile it is. The longer the term of the bond, the more volatile it is. But why is it? The best analogy, and Chris, I know you teach this to kids, so interrupt me and add any anecdotes or stories or ways of explaining it. But the best way that I can explain why bonds go down when interest rates go up, or conversely, why bonds go up if interest rates go down, it's an inverse relationship between the price of bonds and interest rate. Why is that? Let's pretend, folks, you all own a bond, okay? You just got a bond. I don't care what kind of bond it is, you just got a bond. And let's pretend the interest rate on that bond is 2%.
Mm-hmm. So say you bought it a year ago and you're holding it now.
Yep, and it pays you 2% interest. And then for one reason or another, you want your money back. You no longer want this bond. Now, what's great about the bond market is the bond market itself, folks, dwarfs the stock market. The stock market gets all the attention because it has all the volatility, huge volatility swings, huge price swings. Everything keys off of the stock market this, the stock market that. The bond market in sheer size dwarfs the stock market. That's how massive the bond market is. So let's just pretend you had this one bond. And if you want to sell it, there's an active market for selling it. You just go out there, you would actually get a hold of your broker and your broker could sell it. But let's just dumb this down. Let's pretend you could actually go on a Craigslist and list an ad, Chris, to sell your bond.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just say that's the way you did it. It's not the way you would do it, but let's just say you could. So you list an ad on Craigslist, Chris, and your ad says, bond for sale, currently yielding 2%. Serious inquiries only. And you put your phone number.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to sell a bond that you currently own that pays 2%. But Chris, new bonds pay 5%.
So between last year and this year, interest rates in our hypothetical situation here have gone up from 2 to 5.
Absolutely. So how many phone calls do you think you're getting?
The attractiveness of what I'm trying to sell is not very good, is it? I'm offering something up that only pays those 2% interest payments rather than someone buying a brand new bond.
Shiny new bond
pays
5.
Shiny new bond pays 5. So they're going to be much more inclined or attracted to that bond.
And not the bond you're selling.
Not the bond I'm selling. But if I'm trying to sell this bond, I could do something to make it more attractive. What is that?
You're going to have to drop the price.
Right. Just like anything on Craigslist, you don't get a lot of attraction. What do you do to right. get more attraction?
So just look at it this way, folks. What happens to the price of something nobody wants? The price begins to go down until it gets to a level that someone is willing to buy it. Now, if you actually did the math, and we won't get into that, Chris, the price you would pay for that bond would actually end up yielding the same as if you paid the full price for a new bond or
price. There is a price that any existing bond can be sold at that would make it competitive with a new shiny bond.
Exactly.
But that price is going to be much lower than the new shiny bond because the interest payments aren't the same. So there has to be some way of equalizing between the two.
Right. So if you put $10,000 in this bond that was paying 2, now new interest rates are paying 5. There is a calculation and there's websites and apps that would do this calculation for you. Chris and I aren't going to get into the calculation. But that bond would have to drop to a certain price. Maybe it has to drop to 8 or 7 or 6,000 instead of the 10 you paid to make it actuarially equal to paying full price for a 5% bond. So you have to lower your price. The point of the economic point here can't be lost on you folks. When nobody wants something, the price will drop until it gets to a level where someone is interested and will buy it. So when interest rates go up, existing bonds will lose value merely for any other reason except newer bonds pay more. So existing bonds that pay less have to go down in price. So let's just turn this the other way around, folks, to understand what we're saying. Let's say, Chris, you have a bond that you bought that was paying 5%. And now for one reason or another, you want to sell it. So you go back to Craigslist and you post your ad, the same ad as before, where you say bond for sale, currently yielding 5%. Serious inquiries only. And all new bonds, Chris, are only paying 2%. How often do you think your phone's going to be ringing?
It's going to be ringing off the hook.
Exactly. And people all over are going to be calling you because why would they want to buy a fancy new bond paying just 2% when they can get your bond paying 5%? So now all of a sudden your phone is ringing off the hook. Chris, what happens to the price of something that is in limited supply and everybody wants it?
Price goes up.
Exactly. So when interest rates go down, the value of your existing bonds will generally go up because they are paying an interest rate higher than what new bonds would pay. So right now, when you start getting your quarter end statements, which will be sent out in another week or so, you're going to notice you're going to notice a drop in the value of your bonds because interest rates have gone up over the last 3 months and especially over the last month and really big time since the election of Trump. Stocks have gone up quite a bit, but bonds have lost quite a bit. And it's, again, all being driven by the expectation, folks, that Trump is going to seriously cut corporate tax rates and personal tax rates, spurring a lot of growth and expansion. He is going to dramatically cut, or at least this is what he said he wanted to do, the corporate tax rate and allow for the repatriation of trillions of dollars of overseas profits that American companies don't want to bring back into the U.S. The thought is that he will allow these companies to bring the money in at a rate as low as 10%, I heard. And he's expected to announce massive infrastructure spending. Remember, the man's a developer. This is what he does. So if he can use other people's money, the government money, to expand massive infrastructure expansion, all of these three things, Chris, is worrying investors that inflation is going to come back. And if inflation comes back, it will drive interest rates higher. Well, the markets often react. Markets don't trade based on what something is valued today, Chris. They're based on what it's going to be valued tomorrow. The markets are always looking 6 to 12 months into the future, but they're reacting on it now. So that's one of the reasons you're going to notice your bonds have gone down as interest rates have gone up.
Exactly.
All right. All I have to say about it. Anything else you want to add?
No. And I think that reminding people that these markets, the financial markets, are what we call forward-looking. They aren't looking. They look some about what happened in the past, what happened maybe yesterday, and they pay attention to what's happening today. But just like driving your car down the highway is how I compare it. When you're driving your car down the highway, you don't look just 10 feet in front of the hood and make all your decisions based on that. What's happening right now, you're driving down the highway, you're looking out as far as you can because you want to see, are there cars breaking ahead? Is there a curve in the road? Is there a deer jumping out of the bushes? And you're doing that because you want to be able to react as soon as possible. You don't wait until you're at the deer before you break. When you see it off in the distance, you react now. And that's what investors do. They're looking into the future, trying to predict what's going to happen based on all available information that's going on in the news and in the elections and all that kind of stuff. And they're not going to wait until it actually happens. Once they have a prediction of what's going to happen, the way you make money as an investor, you don't wait till it actually happens because then it's too late. You place your bet today. You actually change what you're doing with your money today so that when what you see in the future occurs, you will benefit from making that decision earlier than later. And so that's absolutely what we're seeing in the bond markets in particular that we've been talking about today, but also the stock markets in general. That's what's going on. It's not all about today. You see, people say, well, when something happens today, the stock markets go crazy. They, you know, might go way up, might go way down, depending on the news. Well, that's just the way markets digest information. They are constantly digesting this new information, and it gets reflected in price changes as investors change their behavior, as they change their opinion about what the future sees.
Excellent. I think that sums it up quite well.
Good.
Alrighty.
So why don't you give us, we have a minute and a half, so why don't you tease us as to what we're going to talk about in the last segment?
We're going to do a little quick year-end checklist. I'm not going to get through the full checklist I have here because you took much longer than I thought talking about bonds. But what we are going to do is get through some of these things you need to be doing before December 31st gets here.
Well, that sounds pretty good. How many checkpoints do we have to get through on the list?
As many as we want. And seeing as we're only going to have, what do we get, 17 minutes minus the music and Social Security update, so we'll probably get through three, maybe five.
Maybe we could go quick.
We'd have to go wicked quick.
Okay.
I'll stick with 3 to 5.
Okay. So when you come back from this short break, we're going to get to the last segment, which we'll talk about a few more items as Jim described. We're also going to hear the number one song, actually one of the top 10 hits from this week in 1981, which is 35 years ago, all in our connection to Social Security. I'll give you a quick update, what's new on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com this week. And the hint on this song is about a woman finding strength to leave her man. It was sung by an Australian band known previously as Seafood Mama. That's something I didn't know.
Seafood Mama.
That was their old name. So we'll find out who that is after this short break.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement IRA Show. Recognize the song?
I recognize the song, but I can't place the name or the band. I just got Seafood Mama in my head.
Does this sound like a Seafood Mama song?
It does not sound like a Seafood Mama.
Here's the chorus. So there's the song title, Harden My Heart. By Quarterflash.
Oh, I would have never got that.
It's Quarterflash. The name Quarterflash is taken from the Australian slogan, quote, a quarter flash and three parts foolish. Something they say down under, apparently. So this is their most popular single, eventually reaching number 3 on the Billboard Top 100. In 1982, Elton John requested the band Quarterflash to be his opening act, which was quite an honor because Elton John rarely had an opening act. So that was... Well, kudos to Seafood Mama. So this all brings us to our update on what's new on our blog post, helpwithmysocialsecurity.com. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
what's new, Pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
So this week on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, Jim actually contributes to a post.
Wow,
thank you. Talking about key ages in Social Security. At what age can you claim? At what age do you get the most Social Security benefit?
When did I do this?
A while back. We've had it in storage for a while. We just decided to release it here. And
so I recorded this, but it's never been released?
Well, I'm not going to say that, but it's being refreshed and renewed.
Wow, because I haven't posted a blog post in a while.
A little while. But, you know, it's never hurts to review some of the basics. Because sometimes we talk about things we assume everybody knows.
Well, seeing as I'm doing all this, can you play the clapping? Because I did a very good job.
Well, I'm not sure it was a good job. But you're on there. Your voice is there. So that's what's new this week on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
What's new, pussycat?
So everybody wants to hear my voice can go to that blog post. And
well, they're hearing it now, so...
they can get even more.
Some of them might be plugging their ears, but anyway.
Well, this show's going to end, so we can continue to
So they
hear
can
me.
Unplug their ears?
All right, so I got a quick little year-end checklist. I'm just reading this off. This is just, when I got it, I thought, hey, there's some pretty good things in here to remind
people. These aren't from your own
of.
Mind?
Negative.
Oh. This Do you agree with them at least?
Some of them I think are pretty hokey.
Okay,
but
let's skip the hokey ones.
Yeah, we are going to skip the hokey one. The first one made me laugh because it's what we've been pounding the tar on. Huh? That's a saying. Pounding the tar is a saying. Don't look at me that way.
Pounding tar?
Pounding the tar.
Okay.
That is a saying.
Thought it was pounding concrete, but...
No, it's not pounding concrete. It's pounding the tar.
Okay. What is it?
What's the saying?
No.
You're looking it up. You don't trust me. This one I know I'm right on. It's pounding the tar.
Okay. Go ahead.
Should you do a Roth conversion? I'm just saying we talked about this. We dedicated whole shows. We call this Roth conversion season. So what this whole checklist was when it came by to me is things that people should do before December 31st. And Chris and I talk about this all the time on conversions, folks. So I don't want to belabor this anymore because I know we've done entire shows on it. But if you want to declare a conversion, an IRA to Roth IRA conversion on your 2016 taxes, you've got to do it by December 31st, 2016. So that was the first thing that caught me on this year-end checklist. Their number one has been something that we have been really pushing our listeners to follow up on.
Yeah. Pounding tar and pounding concrete refer to the same thing. It's runners. You know, their feet are hitting the ground as they're running. As opposed to things people tell you all the time, like go pound sand.
It's always been go pound tar.
Well, it means two different things.
Whatever.
Pounding the sand, concrete or the tar, you're getting stuff done. You're moving down the road. You're doing it. Pounding sand means get out of my face, go amuse yourself by doing something completely monotonous like pounding sand.
Well, I have never heard go pound concrete, but I have heard go pound tar.
Okay.
Not quite sure I ever heard go pound sand, but who knows? I don't have the best track record on these euphemisms, or Americanisms, whatever we call them. Okay, so the first thing on this checklist was to make sure, folks, if you are going to do a conversion in 2016, you get it done by December 31st. The next one, make sure you take your required minimum distributions. Now, that's an important one. That's only going to apply to people who are over the age of 70 and a half. And when you get older than 70 and a half, you have to start taking money from your retirement accounts, whether they're a 401k, a 403b, a 457, or an IRA. You've got to take money out of them when you reach the age of 70 and a half. You do not want to forget to do this. It has to be done by December 31st. So you can do it earlier. That's fine.
but you have to take the money out for 2016 by December 31st. So the reason, well, they have this as number two on this checklist. It should be number one, in my opinion, if you're over the age of 70 and a half. If you're under the age of 70 and a half, it's probably not very important to you at all because you don't worry about required minimum distributions. But for those who are subject to them, if you don't take the required minimum distribution and the IRS finds out, there will be a 50. Yeah, it's like, wait a minute. There will
a
be
a huge
yes
penalty.
I kept having the 10%, and how I started with 7 is beyond me. But there will be a 50% penalty tax.
Yeah, not something you want to take on.
So make sure you do that by December 31st. Mm-hmm. Another one that applies only if you're over the age of 70 and a half. Again, do you plan on donating to charity this year? If you do, you may want to consider a QCD, Qualified Charitable Distribution. We've talked about these on previous shows, so if you want to learn about them, go to our website, Jim Helps. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Right there on the homepage, you're going to see a link to our radio show or to our iTunes website, I guess you could call it. It's a radio show website, a podcast website, too. Mm-hmm. And it's called the retirementandiraShow.com. But when you go there in the search box, put in the initials QCD and click search, and a bunch of info on qualified charitable distributions will pop up. These are distributions from an IRA that go directly to a charity, from your IRA directly to a charity. Even if it's a traditional IRA where you do this distribution, it will be 100% tax-free. It's not, you're not going to have to declare it on your income taxes and then take a charitable deduction on your income taxes. You just won't declare this at all in taxes. So if you are charitably inclined and you are over the age of 70 and a half, you cannot do this if you are younger than 70 and a half, older than the age of 70 and a half, you can direct money directly from your IRA to a qualified charity and not have to pay any taxes on that distribution. But again, it must be done by December 31st in order for it to be on your 2016 taxes.
That's a good one.
Did you have anything to add to that?
Or a question out there in the audience, of course, is will that count as my required minimum distribution?
Yes, if you have not taken it yet. If you've already taken money out of your IRA, required minimum distributions are deemed to be the first dollars removed from an IRA after the owner is age 70 and a half or older. So if you have already taken money out of your IRA, you can still do a QCD, Chris. That's not a problem. You can donate up to $100,000 a year from your retirement accounts as a QCD.
So if you don't need the money, but you're forced to take a required minimum distribution and you were planning to make a charitable donation anyway, this is a nice clean way to avoid having the, you know, the tax implications of having to try to take a deduction and that sort of thing. There's just no tax qualifies to satisfy your RMD if needed. And the charity gets the benefit of it and also, of course, doesn't pay tax on it because if it's a qualified charity, it's a tax-exempt organization.
Exactly.
And the only person that's bumming in this whole thing is the U.S. government because they didn't get to tax it.
Exactly. But they made this rule, so we're going to take advantage of it. Okay. Have you updated your beneficiary forms? This one really doesn't necessarily have to be a year-end checklist, short of the fact that you should look at your beneficiary designations every year and make sure that the correct person or persons you want to inherit your accounts are named on there as beneficiary. There's no deadline in the sense, gee, you got to get this done by December 31st, 2016 in order for it to count in 2017. There's no rule like that at all. But it is just a good time. It's kind of like they say when the clocks change is the same time you should change your batteries in your smoke detector. Well, when all this year-end change is happening is a good time to look at your beneficiary designations. Mm-hmm. But there is one beneficiary designation date that is very important, and that is if you inherited an IRA. If you inherited an IRA, whether it's a traditional or a Roth IRA, you have until December 31st of the year following the year the original owner died. You have to, by the following December 31st, begin taking required minimum distributions for that inherited IRA. So that is another RMD rule, but it's the year following. It's that December 31st. So that is another important one if you inherited an IRA. The other thing, if you inherited an IRA, Chris, with multiple beneficiaries, you have to break that IRA up into smaller inherited IRAs. So let's say you inherited an IRA with three of your siblings. So there's four of you. Each get 25%, and it was your mother's IRA. Just, again, making all this pot up. If you inherit it and you are one of many beneficiaries, you have to break out all four of those children into their own separate inherited IRA accounts by December 31st of the year following the owner's death, or all beneficiaries have to use the remaining life expectancy of the oldest beneficiary for required minimum distribution purposes. So it's going to be very important if you have multiple beneficiaries of an inherited IRA, you also only have to December 31st of the year following the owner's death to break out all individual people who are named as beneficiaries. So if you got four or five children named, they all take, Chris, their percent that they were given and move it. They don't have to move it to an IRA. They can just close it and take the money out and pay taxes on it. But if you want to keep it open and stretched out, you'd move it to your own inherited IRA. But you have to break the retirement account up by December 31st. A different designation date for those who are listening might be saying, wait, I've always heard September 30th. I've always heard September 30th. September 30th is different. All beneficiaries on the beneficiary form who are not paid out by September 30th of the year following the IRA owner's death will be included in the calculation for required minimum distributions. So everyone named on that IRA is going to be looked at. That's called the designation date, Chris. And if there is a non-human beneficiary still named as beneficiary after September 30th, then even the human beneficiaries have to follow the rules of a non-human beneficiary, which is essentially close the IRA within 5 years.
Right. And people will wonder, what do you mean a non-human?
A trust, charity,
trust,
a school,
charity,
a church.
A pet.
A pet. People name many different things as beneficiaries of their IRA. So anyways, there's a lot. December 31st is a very, very important date. So you've got to be following a lot of this on your year-end checklist, I guess you could say. Okay, so how much time do we have left?
7 minutes.
Wow, we got plenty. We're going to get through. Yeah,
I thought
many.
So.
Yeah,
it's going
more.
Pretty quick.
Yeah, fast. I could be getting into much more depth then. I didn't think of that. Anything you want me to expand upon?
Not so far.
You sure?
I'm sure.
All right. Okay. Have you made excess contributions into previous IRAs or, but did you make an excess contribution into your IRA or Roth IRA? If so, you may want to remove it. You don't necessarily have to remove this one by December 31st. You actually have to the year following, to October 15th. Mm-hmm. However, if you remove it by December 31st, there is no 6% penalty tax. And the 6% penalty tax would apply for all previous years too. So let me explain a little bit that's going on here. If you put excess money into your IRA or Roth IRA that you weren't allowed to do, you have to remove that money by the following October 15th, or the government is going to begin imposing 6% penalty taxes. And once that penalty tax begins, they will impose the penalty tax every year you leave money in your IRA. But they don't prorate that, Chris. So if you removed the money the following, once the penalty begins, the following June 30th, you don't get assessed a 3% penalty, half of the 6%. They look every December 31st. And if the money is still in there on December 31st, you pay the 6% penalty. So let's just say the excess contribution stays in your IRA because it's invested in something really good and it's rising and you want to get that growth. As long as you get it out by December 31st, you won't have to pay a 6% penalty, even though it was in there for essentially the entire year. So the December 31st date, again, is very important in this case on the 6% excess contribution penalty. Mm-hmm. I think folks can
now be... This happens to people a lot because they start making contributions. I would say this normally happens to people who make kind of regular timed contributions, say monthly, every time they get paid. But they get towards the end of the year and then they get a big bonus, or halfway through the year they started a new job, they got a promotion and they're making a lot more money, where by the end of the year it turns out they made too much money to, say, contribute to a Roth, or they made too much money to have the contributions to the IRA be tax deductible. Those types of events will happen where at the beginning of the year they didn't anticipate this happening, but by the end of the year they're in that position. So they need to undo that if they want to avoid potential penalties moving forward. You need to realize it by the end of the year, get that excess contribution, maybe all of it. If you, say, ended up making a couple $100,000 in the year and you weren't anticipating it, making it so you shouldn't have contributed anything to the Roth IRA, any money you put in there, you got to get that back out by December 31st. Otherwise, you risk exposure to these sorts of penalties.
Excellent. Okay, a couple of these we've kind of already covered. Well, the other checklist, and it's a little bit redundant, is to check beneficiary forms of your employer plans, insurance policies, and annuities.
And there's a new one, actually. I don't know. Well, you claim you listened to the show last week. There's those new designated beneficiary forms for motor vehicles in the state of Colorado. So as you're updating your designated beneficiary forms for your retirement accounts, if you'd like your motor vehicle to pass outside of probate as part of that process, you can now, in the state of Colorado and possibly other states, you'd have to check with your state, have a designated beneficiary for your motor vehicle and take advantage of that transfer of ownership from you to your decedents, is what they're called. No. The decedent's the dead person, to your people who are inheriting your beneficiaries. You can have that pass through these documents instead of ending your motor vehicle, ending up in limbo for a while in the probate process. So I'd throw that one in there too, the one that most people aren't going to think about, the designated beneficiary form for motor vehicles.
Do you have that?
No.
Yeah, I don't.
Because it's brand new.
I don't see what the problem. Again, I wasn't here last week to chat with Pete why the legislator would see the need for doing this.
Because the value of a lot of places you can avoid probate if the estate is small enough. But a vehicle, a valuable vehicle, can be enough to push you above and throw your estate into probate. That was the number one issue.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not sold that that's a necessary thing to do, but you can do it. But there'll be no problem whatsoever if your estate is higher than the statutory limits here, and passing a car via a will is not going to be a problem.
No, it's not that it couldn't happen. It's just one extra asset that you could pass via designated beneficiary form rather than through the probate process. And you could, like he said, you could avoid probate in general if your the rest of your estate, other than your motor vehicles, were small enough to be under the limit.
But the one thing I also want to talk about is the beneficiary forms of your annuities, your employer plans, and your life insurance. The earlier one was the beneficiary forms of your IRA. To me, all of these can be rolled into one, and your car. It's really, it's not three separate things to check off. Update your beneficiary forms, and don't forget annuities, life insurance policies, and employer plans as well. And again, a great time to do it is year end. Just wrap it all up. Just make sure everybody on those policies and those forms are who you want to get that asset. Because these assets pass by right of law, not your will, right of law. And whoever is named as beneficiary on your annuity, your life insurance policy, or your IRA is probably going to get it. And if that happens to be your ex-spouse you no longer care for, it could present some trouble.
Correct. So that music means we're at the end of another episode of the Retirement and IRA Show. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Please reach out to us if you have any questions. Jim@jimhelps.com is the best way to do that. We'll be happy to answer questions on the air or even directly. For those of you listening live, enjoy the rest of your Saturday. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.